You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 26 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming to you live and loud from a cold Houghton, Johannesburg this morning. On the show today, Mia Kruger talking Tiger Brands and Netcare results. We've also got Dr. Richard Friedland from Netcare on talking hospitals under a pandemic, Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association on their right to sell tobacco products under a lockdown, whilst both government and World Health Organizations say that is a bad idea. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: pandemic delivers 943 million Rand revenue blow to Netcare, and CNBC: European countries considering travel bubbles to try and save post-lockdown tourist season. Morning markets: US was closed last night, Asia green with Sydney and Tokyo up over 2%. Commodities all green, led by West Texas oil up almost 3% at 34.20, ZAR at 17.56, and top 40, the opening betting markets are calling it over 1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
We heard Mia Kruger from Kruger International on the line. US closed last night, so a very quiet day on the JSE is usually the trend when the US doesn't get up for trading day. Mia, morning. Thanks for your time. Tiger Brands results, a lot of moving parts. Truthfully, none of them very good. One of their biggest headwinds probably over the last couple of years, and I suspect for the next couple of years, branded consumer goods, a really tough space. I mean, I don't know, rice is rice. Do we need the brands? Tiger Brands seems to be finding maybe not.
Absolutely. This has been a big problem for them, as you mentioned, Simon. Good morning. They've had this problem being sort of more prevalent for them the past couple of years. And it seems like people in South Africa and the bigger consumer here, who we've known has been under pressure for the last couple of years, have been sort of brand agnostic. And if this is the issue that we see going forward, we will also see this putting through to the retailers. And that is why I also suspect that something that became as cheap before the lockdown as ShopRite would be a share that would possibly prosper in years to come.
Yeah, because they can go and get their sort of store-branded goods. And I know chatting with you know, the ShopRites and the Pick and Pays, our store brands are not as big a percentage of sales as we see as many of the global markets. In other words, there's opportunity there because, with respect, a ginger biscuit is a ginger biscuit.
Absolutely, that's the thing. And I mean, like you say, the results that we saw kind of came out of Tiger Brands has just supported this view. There is still opportunity in South Africa, and it's also good to sort of know in a time like this that there are still opportunities for companies where there is money to be made.
Netcare results out yesterday. I'm chatting with the CEO, Dr. Friedland, in a moment. Intuitively, you would think a pandemic is good for a hospital group. Actually, when you sort of go through the numbers and you start to think about the actual implications, it was a tough period to end March, and it's going to only get tougher for Netcare and Life Healthcare. Mediclinic are going to have similar situations.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is that most of these big hospital groups had to put off planned surgeries, planned acceptances into the hospital, and those are big money for them that they can actually bank on. So we know that a lot of that money that they were planning on earning did not come through, and I don't think that people will have the confidence to return to hospitals for planned surgeries quite soon yet, especially with the numbers that we're seeing all these hospitals predicting for COVID patients being admitted to the hospitals in the coming weeks and the coming months, and that the peak is still to come for South Africa in that.
Yeah, and it's that high base cost. I mean, I always call hospitals, you know, a tongue-in-cheek comment that they're like fancy hotels in a sense, but what you've got is that high base cost. If you can't get the throughput into the hospital, your costs broadly remain the same, but your revenue collapses and your earnings go with that revenue.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's the thing, that there's a very, very high running cost for our hospitals. And if they don't get admittances on a daily basis, then these costs aren't met and they are actually running into negative.
Lastly, Growthpoint did an update. It was an update to bondholders, but coupled with the Liberty 2 Degrees update of, if memory serves, I think it was Thursday last week, giving us some color in terms of how rental collections are going. Certainly, Growthpoint, perhaps a bit better than some of the others. They're getting about 70% of rentals in April, a little bit higher in May. It's still 200 million short of what they would normally be collecting during that period. The property space is in a really tight spot, and this is equally not going away. On the retail side, I think a lot of offices are not going to go back to work anytime soon. Property really is in a tough space.
Absolutely, Anna. I mean, you know what the property index has done. If we look at the cognitive effort, you know, it's down over, you know, around 60%. And we look at the numbers and it just doesn't make sense. Even though, having said that, we know that there are so many players out there. We know that there are so many development and building have gone on over the past couple of years. And we know that the consumer and the economy is on its knees. So if you have to pick the star, like you said, Growthpoint is definitely the one. And even Growthpoint share price is down in the same situation as all these companies. So if you have to pick one and hope for consolidation in this era, then I think that you could bank on a star like Growthpoint. All companies in this sector will definitely not go under. There will be stars, there will be companies. We saw other good results also come from, and good talk coming from Bolwyn, for instance. Mm-hmm. But you know, just keep your eyes on the strong ones here, and Growthpoint definitely is the one that I'd keep if I had to pick one of them.
That's a great point. This is not a time to go find the sort of second level stocks. Buy the really, really quality ones, such as Growthpoint. They're going to come out the other side, and frankly, their prices are cheap. We don't need to go and try and find the sort of beaten down sort of B grades. We can get A grades at great prices. Mia Kruger from Kruger International, always appreciate your time. Thank you.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Dr. Richard Friedland, he's CEO of Netcare. Profit for the 6 months to end March, down 34%. HEPS a little down, 5 cents and some change, down to 79 cents. Richard, appreciate your time this morning. We're really sitting in a strange place, and I imagine for healthcare providers such as yourself and Netcare, even more so, it's the quiet before the storm. We know that storm is coming. We know it's going to be rough. How ready is our broader healthcare industry generally and Netcare specifically for what is coming with COVID-19?
Yeah, good morning, Simon. I think it's important to state that the textbook on COVID-19 is yet to be written.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, we're learning on a daily basis. And this is what we're seeing globally and what we're seeing in South Africa. I think that we are fortunate in South Africa to come at this somewhat later than many of the other so-called developed countries and are learning those lessons. But we've had some harsh lessons to learn ourselves, particularly in Netcare, because, mm-hmm. you know, there are significant behavioral lessons needed to be learned. We've put in a myriad of precautionary measures right across all of our groups. But to say we're absolutely ready, certainly we have been through this period, but for the surge that's coming is a difficult one to answer. You know, there are a myriad of models out there. We have our own. There's a debate as to when this surge will happen and the extent of it. In our own internal modeling, we believe that if it happens in July, it'll be milder than if it happens in August. And if it happens in July, we will probably have enough capacity. But certainly if it happens later and the numbers are higher, we're going to be under pressure from a capacity point of view.
You made the point up front there. The textbook has been written on the fly. This is one of the giant challenges. We can, what's this disease? Let's call it 6 months old. Very seldom are we operating. We really are operating blind. And that's not because of lack of preparedness. That's just because, as you say, I mean, we're learning from the rest of the world. But they're only a couple of weeks ahead of us. I mean, this puts significant pressure on planning for what is truly, you know, an unknown scenario as to what's coming. We can model, yeah. But we won't know until it truly arrives.
Well, you know, the British statistician George Box said that famously said all models are wrong and some are useful.
Yes.
And I think that if you look at since January, Over 2,500 scientific articles have been published on this disease. It's unprecedented, and yet we know more the wiser in terms of the treatment and how it's going to evolve. And that's why we've taken those unprecedented steps in our 23-year history. I mean, it's the first time we're not paying a dividend to preserve cash. It's the first time we're withdrawing guidance. First time we've had cash preservation measures in place, and have asked for a waiver of debt covenants. The level of uncertainty, unfortunately, is that high. And that's what we're faced with. And I think not dissimilar to other companies at the moment.
Yeah, not dissimilar, of course, healthcare right at that front line. The results were to March. You saw expenses incurred due to pandemic. You saw less elective surgery. I was just chatting with my market commentator, Mia Kruger. Those both hurt the group. I imagine April and probably May has been, frankly, worse. I mean, you know, yes, we're on level 4. Yes, we're moving to level 3. But elective surgeries, you're still keeping those beds open. You're still incurring costs in terms of PPE, those ultraviolet robots that you've got, keeping your staff and your incoming patients safe from the disease.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of additional costs coming into the business. Obviously, April was a massive diminution in all forms of activity, one due to the lockdown, and its commensurate effect on unnatural deaths dropped by 60% in the country, which tells you that there was very little trauma or emergency medicine. Mm-hmm. Respiratory viruses were at an all-time low because kids are at home away from school and not spreading the flu virus and other viruses you normally see. So medical admissions were down, and obviously we stopped elective surgery. We've seen an uptick, as we showed in our results in May, and we're tracking towards a 15% increase already in May in activity versus April. And obviously with the lessening of the lockdown, we think more activity returns. But again, one is hesitant because we've prepared our hospitals for this COVID surge. And so it's not a question of opening them up fully. One's got to be extremely cautious until at least we're through the peak of this pandemic.
Yeah, I spent a week in your hospitals, one of your hospitals, over Easter, and it was eerie in how quiet it was. Truthfully, I was in isolation a few days, but even the general ward. A last question, telemedicine, we've spoken a lot about it. Is this perhaps, when we look back on the pandemic in a couple of years, we can say this was telemedicine's sort of really coming to the fore and becoming a significant part of healthcare post the pandemic?
Yes, Simon. I think that in a post-COVID environment, I think a lot more people will make use of telemedicine. I think it's a very good tool, particularly for those that are extremely vulnerable, elderly with comorbidities who don't want to come into a facility or go out. But it's a very good screening tool. It's not a substitute for a physical examination mm-hmm. when it's necessary, but it does give a general practitioner or a specialist an inkling of what's going on and able to guide the patients to say, look, I think, a script will do, or have an x-ray and then come back to me. And we've been able to put in something that's reasonably innovative. It doesn't cost the doctors anything. It's fully encrypted, and you don't have to download an app. So, and for those who can't afford data, you can phone in as well. And so we think that telemedicine really takes off. Obviously, the Health Professional Council have only allowed this form of telemedicine during the COVID crisis, and one hopes that the regulator will review this at the end of COVID and say, you know, it's here to stay.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about the regulatory environment. We'll leave that there. Dr. Richard Frieden, CEO of Netcare, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting tobacco sales now, we've got the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association Chair in Sinklankla Nguni. So really appreciate your time this morning. Let's first get a size of the industry. How many people is tobacco employing in South Africa? What's the industry worth to the country in terms of tax revenue and retail sales?
Look, it's very difficult to put a number in as far as how many people are employed by the industry. Along the value chain, as you know, obviously the industry starts off at the farming sector and moves on to cigarette manufacturing mm-hmm. and then thereafter into the retail sector, which is obviously in South Africa split into the formal and informal trade. Now, in the informal trade, you obviously have the spaza shop owners and the hawkers, and there are many of those in as far as numbers concerned. We know that, for instance, the manufacturers employ thousands of South Africans. And as far as tax revenue, traditionally the South African cigarette industry contributes about 15 billion rand per annum and as far as excise, which is levied on the sale of cigarettes. So those are the numbers that you're looking at. And obviously it's substantially a substantial amount in as far as income tax and other tax types, which are associated with operating business in the Republic.
Yeah, so I mean, 15 billion a year, that's one and a quarter, more or less, billion a month. And as you said, that's just the part going to SARS. Those aren't all the other bits. Those aren't the spaza shops and everyone else earning a bit. I mean, I think we can broadly, I mean, there's certainly revenue that government, that the value chain is losing out in this process. You've engaged a legal process with government around trying to get tobacco sales reopened. I think a lot of folks, well, the president initially said level four, that was pulled back. Now we hear not level three. Truthfully, no idea. What is the status of that legal process?
As you correctly put it, we did institute legal proceedings on the 4th of May. The application was split into two parts. Part A was heard on the 12th of May. Now, what transpired therein is that we were granted the declarator in order to manufacture for export purposes. Mm-hmm. And we were also then granted an order compelling the state to give us documents which related to the reasons for the promulgation of Regulation 27 of the current Level 4 regulation, which bans cigarettes and other tobacco-related products. Now, the deadline for that is today, the 26th of May. So we are hoping to receive those documents by no later than close of business today, following which we will then supplement our papers, particularly in light of the fact that we will now be moving to level three and have the matter set down for hearing at the Pretoria High Court.
You mentioned you're now able to manufacture and export. How significant is export tobacco products for the South African manufacturers?
It only constitutes a minute percentage of the total revenue that the factory owners, especially the South African ones, generate. So it's only but a small repeat, and it doesn't really help much. I mean, it helps in as far as getting some activity going, but ultimately, first part will always be manufacturing rather for local sales.
You're responding. Obviously, you're going to get the documents from government today. What we have seen is reports coming out around reasons why government is concerned, health issues around smoking. We've seen the World Health Organization more recently put out notification around smoking during a pandemic, concerns around sharing of cigarettes, concerns around taking masks off to smoke, concerns around raising hands to mouths in order to smoke. All of those considered to be increasing risks in the pandemic. What's your organization's response to the broad sort of health evidence that smoking is bad in a pandemic?
Look, smoking, no one can dispute that smoking is bad. I mean, that's why you have the necessary health warnings, which are affixed onto a packet of cigarettes. But in as far as the pandemic is concerned, we have yet to see any evidence which shows that smokers, for instance, have been more prone to catching the virus, or the fact that smoking leads to the spread of the virus. In fact, what we are seeing from studies which have been conducted worldwide is the opposite. There's a peer-reviewed study, for instance, by a doctor from Greece, which has shown that smokers have been less affected by the virus. And it is the only peer-reviewed study worldwide currently in place. There's also studies, of course, in France and the United States, for instance, which also show that smokers have been less affected by the virus. And France is also now conducting studies on whether nicotine is a potential protection, some sort of protection against contraction of the virus. So as far as we are concerned, we've never disputed that there are smoking, rather health issues associated with smoking, but so are their health issues in as far as consuming, for instance, sugary products and or drinking alcohol, for instance. So that's not the issue here. What we're saying is government has not shown us the link between smoking and the spread of the virus, which is the purpose of implementing the regulations under which we currently sit.
Yeah, and this is a battle I think is going to go on, and a debate that's going to go for some time. We'll leave that there. That's Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association Chairperson Sinclankla Nguni. Appreciate your time this morning. That's it for the show today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 on moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. Podcasts available from 7 everywhere where podcasts are found. Message us on social media. Use hashtag MoneyWeb now. My thanks to our guests and to Cordora and Eddie for helping us put the show together. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.